okay with it?
Yes, I am, sir.
All right.
Can you be okay for me?
I can, but she's welcome to come into the bar. I mean, in fact, I just assumed she'd come in. There's quite a distance there. Salsa, I'd be happy to hear from you.
I thank you so much, Your Honor, for allowing me to speak to you and to the court. I just want him to know that what he did to me did not define me. I am the same person before he came, and I'll always remain the same person. It was my faith, it was my family, it was the love, it was the support that allowed me to not let him get away with it. He threatened to kill me 3 times. He threatened to kill my family. He didn't even know my family. And I knew that in my heart as he was attacking me and hurting me. And I just prayed to God that he would allow me to live. I didn't want my family to have to live with the thought that I died that way, because I really believed he was going to kill me. It was by the grace of God that he didn't. And I want to thank the police and the detectives and everybody that came to me and everybody that has supported me. And I want him to know that I've forgiven him, but I won't forget anything that he did. But I had to forgive him for my own peace of mind. And this is what I wanted you to know. And I feel sorry for him because he's so young and he has given up a whole chunk of his life. For what? He thought I had money. He didn't come to rob me, because by the time I got out of my bed, hit my touch lamp and said, "Tuffy," which is one of my cats, "what did you do now?" He was already in my bedroom doorway. It wasn't in the hallway. It wasn't in the kitchen. It was in my bedroom. I screamed at the top of my lungs. He said, "If you scream one more time, I'll kill you right here." That gun looked real to me. It felt real when he hit me with it. I just can't imagine why he did what he did to me. I had only met him 2 days before when he knocked on my door and politely told me his name, that he lived next door. I didn't know he lived next door, and asked if he could shovel off my deck. I said, "Will you sleep off my car?" And he said, "Certainly." And he said, "How about your driveway?" I said, "No, I have a gentleman that plows me out." I said, "How much would you like?" And he said, $10. It's a good thing that's the only thing he asked for, because all I had in my wallet at the time was $11. I gave him a $10 bill and I closed my door. To me, this was premeditated, because my storm door and my inside door had deadbolts. I had winterized air conditioners, one in my bedroom and one in the living room. He had pulled that air conditioner out and crawled through my living room window. That's how he got in. Throughout the whole ordeal, he had the pillowcase over my head. But for some unknown reason, before he put the pillowcase over my head, he had me kneel in front of the bed. I said his name. Why would I say his name? But I did. And he said, I said, "Mark." And he goes, "No, Frank." And then he put the pillowcase over my head. I never did see his face, but when the detectives came, I had a gut feeling, and I've always been told to go with your gut feeling. And I said, "I don't want to point fingers, but I have a feeling that you're going to find him right next door." And that's where they found him. And before he put the pillowcase over my head, I also made a mental note of what he was wearing, and that's when they found the clothes that he was wearing. And they also found the pellet gun. And I do thank God that he did not tie me up, or that he did not kill me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Olson.
Jeff is happy to have the court review his statement but doesn't wish to address it.
I have read Jeffrey Alderson's statement as well.
Your Honor, within a couple of weeks of these events, I met with Mrs. Alderson and her family, sort of explained the process of what was going on to meet her. And she shared a story with me that I'd like to share with the court now to address sort of this victim impact component of it and what it did. And she said that after taking her from the tub into the bedroom, and she had a wet pillowcase on her head, I can only imagine how clingy that was and how bad that felt. There was a little gap towards the bottom, and she could look down towards her feet. And he left the bed for a minute, and so she sort of dared to try to look down and see if maybe he left a gun on the bed because he had left the bed. And she told me, she's like, I thought that if I could get the gun, well, I don't know if I could have shot him, but I'd have shot him where it hurts. So even as she's being horribly assailed, this woman's character is bad. This is deserving of the most condemnation that we can impose. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ms. Kaler. Ms. Ames?
If I stay right
here. Sure, absolutely.
Mr. Halley was born on June 24th of 1980. He's 33 years old. He was 32 years old when this incident occurred. The first 32 years of Mr. Halley's life was very, very high. As is outlined in my sentencing memoranda and also in Dr. Elise's report. His father was an alcoholic. He abused drugs. He got booted out of the Army. They were in Florida. His father worked sporadically, but basically left the entire family almost in poverty, penniless. Provided very, very little financial support for the family. His mother was even worse. His mother was an alcoholic. She was a drug abuser with marijuana. The incidents occurred that she was domestically violent towards not only his father, but also towards his older sister. At age 8 or 9, he entered foster care at that very, very young age for 3 months so that his parents could get clean and because of the domestic violence issue. At age 10, he was again taken into foster care. At that time, he was there for 3 years. He was there with his older sister. They went through 2 foster homes. The first foster home, he was removed as well as his older sister was removed because of sexual abuse by the foster father. So he is now 13 years.